Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Couple of quirks, can't call it pancakes, cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, raising dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in, waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb instead of how your back heavy, you beat and lost your mind. Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. This phone call cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with that same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
you know the black freedom movement constitutes your moral conscience. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless. So we're our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the blood stained banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
America. Welcome to another episode of Dr. Mary Lee Live, a thought-provoking show where we tackle the contemporary issues and topics of the day. I am a stand-in announcer to welcome you to the show. As everyone may have known, Dr. Tatum, who was our announcer previously, has gone on to do other things. We wish him well. I will also introduce the rest of the cast. Co-host to the show is Dr. James Cannon, father of entertainer Nick Cannon. Nick Cannon, if anyone does not know, is the sponsor of a bill which was designed to tell the story of Black America from 1619 to 2019, which has been extended to 2022 to tell our story, our history and contributions to the country. As I'm told previous to the show, Dr. Cannon may be a bit late. His schedule, I'm sure, is quite busy. We welcome you again, and as usual, we welcome all guests and listeners to please participate. Give us your input. The only thing we do ask is that if you are not the current speaker, if you would mute your phone so that everyone can hear the current speaker clearly. And without further ado, I'll introduce the host of the show. For 3 years, she's been bringing us to this to tackle these very important issues and topics. We love her very, very much, Dr. Mary Lee. And Dr. Lee, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Jared. I certainly appreciate your standing in. You did a great job. You did a great job. I appreciate you so very much. And I want to welcome everyone to our show for tonight. It's going to be real exciting. So, you know, get your friends on, and we want you to participate. Just remember, we're just sitting around in the living room and having a conversation. Everyone is welcome to join us. And you can join by tapping one on your phone, and our technicians will open up your line. You can make a, have a comment or a question, but we're really happy about being here. And again, I want to thank our co-hosts. I love you all so much, and our audiences for just being so faithful and being here and supporting and participating. Our conversation has been going on now. We're in part 10 of a topic, it's something in me got broken, and no matter how hard I try, I can't fix it. And we're in part 10. We started out with saving our babies. And this topic, you know, I just saw it on a post. I saw it on a post on a young man's Facebook. You know, I think maybe probably somewhere in his 20s. And it just touched my heart that you know, that a young person would be so candid and open to post, you know, such a post. Something in me got broken. See, sometimes we don't know what it is, but, you know, we try to fix it. We might even know what it is. But no matter what or how hard, you know, we're not able to fix it or can't fix it. And so this conversation has been going. I want to thank our guest panelists, our medical and psychiatric staff who's with us week after week after week for probably almost as long as we've been here. I do appreciate you. We're actually going to go to our panelists. We have Dr. Montrese. And we have Dr. Longs. Anyone else, please tap your phone so that we can find you. Okay. And just give a little synopsis of how we got to where we are and why this is so important to us all. And, you know, your position, what you do, and just kind of take your time to recap the past, you know, few weeks. And we're going to start with Dr. Montrese. Welcome, and thank you again for being here.
Hello, good evening, and thank you very much for letting me participate. in this very, very important show with these very important issues. You know, we started off in this series with saving our babies, and by training, I'm a pediatrician and an internist, and I'm retired from practicing, but when I was practicing, I would like to follow my patients from the time they're born, and I had patients in their 90s, and I never did get a patient who made it to 100, but that was my goal, to see everybody. And when you see everybody, you see a lot of things. You don't see everything, but you see a lot of things. And one thing that you know is people are just people, and people, given their circumstances and situations, make decisions and choices that sometimes turn out very good and sometimes turn out not so good. And so we get into our topic of saving our babies. Our babies, our children from the time they're born till the time they die. You can be somebody's baby and be 90. So saving our babies is key. Our young people today are faced with so many different challenges that we weren't faced with, and they need our support in getting through it. Last week in our discussions, touched upon, I'll say, gun control, but we touched upon, people bearing arms and these mass killings, mass killings of our babies, and how do we stop that? What can we do? And we had some division there as to, bearing arms. And who should bear arms, and when, and where should they bear arms? And I think we need to put a little bit more thought into that topic. I really think that if we don't give our kids guns, our kids can't kill our own kids with guns. And so I would love for us to talk a little bit more about that this evening, if we get a chance. But that's the synopsis of where we've been, over the past few weeks. We have to show our kids love. We have to show our kids different opportunities, things that they can do other than make bad choices. We have to offer them some things where they can make some good choices. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Moncrief. Dr. Longs, how are you this evening, and welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Mary Lee. I want to say hello to the panelists and even the special guest speaker tonight. My name is Dr. Curtis Longs. I'm a medical doctor practicing in the field of psychiatry and behavioral sciences. I work in about three or four different environments, primarily being the mental health director for the juvenile detention facility in Wayne County, where, as I speak, our census is at 140. And in this facility, we house and support kids who have accumulated charges related to, pretty much what you see in the news. But we also serve as individuals who are part of the neglect and abuse docket in Wayne County. I also work in a private office in Southfield, Michigan, and I'm involved in a nonprofit group as well. And most recently, I've started an interaction with working with Detroit Area on Aging, which services our aged population in various environments. My primary objective in working all these areas is to educate our community regarding what mental health is, what behavioral health is, and what health is in general. As Dr. Moncrief started earlier, and as Jared alluded to, this topic goes almost 3 months in the making. where we started off with saving our babies. And again, as Dr. Moncrief stated, from birth to death, which would include even saving our 30-year-old babies, our 50-year-old babies. And one of the main focuses was to, we started off talking about juvenile justice. Is there any justice? We touched on topics in terms of kids being tried as adults instead of kids. You know, I would say every day downtown I'm encountering different young people in different scenarios. And I'll just share in terms of an encounter today with a 14-year-old and of individuals on the call who are from Wayne County, Oakland County. You have to be aware of the increased news regarding the cities of River Rouge and Ecorse with massive shootings and most recently 11-year-old losing her life. Well, today I encountered a young man who was right in the middle of that, and it was interesting that when I asked him why he was adjudicated, he said it was for incorrigibility, meaning basically we would all reflect on, you know, when your parents say you're being hard-headed and stubborn. However, the caveat with his presentation included he getting into argument with his mother when she discovered he had, in his words, a Glock. And again, being downtown, I've learned so much about weapons, guns, Glocks, you name it. And it was quite interesting in encountering this kid who stated that, you know, another kid sold him the Glock. And a Glock is a 9mm revolver, which has created a lot of destruction, not only in the inner cities, but also used in the shooting in Buffalo. But these kids also have access to AR, all those massive weapons. But the dialogue resulted into getting the understanding from this young man, first of all, what a friend is, and that, you know, if you're a true friend, you know, a friend shouldn't become a co-defendant. And I would say my approach with young people, particularly with dealing with weapons, I have to watch my tendency to become sarcastic, yet I feel I'm supportive to try to get my meaning and understanding what they're talking about. So ultimately, this led to us getting his mother on a video call, and you can hear in his mother's voice that she's been trying to save her son. And, you know, to have a parent pretty much allude to the fact that she feels safer with her son being locked up or adjudicated than being out free in his neighborhood is very interesting at most. But ultimately, after a 2.5-hour encounter with this young man and his mom, and I've always said that, you know, our kids really want direction, but you have to consider how much distrust they have, not only for individuals their same age, but a lot of adults who I've pretty much suggested that, you know, neglect and abuse goes different ways. So, you know, ultimately this young man, you know, began crying because he stated he's no way he can get out of this situation. And I told him I don't know what it takes to become a part of a gang. I don't know if you have to take indoctrination or you have to, you know, spill blood or whatever it takes. But the point I'm making is that, you know, here's a young man who wants to be saved. He's in the middle of a crisis in Wayne County and in, around the country in general, and he's only 14. And to hear a young person say, well, this is life, and you're trying to recorrect or redirect that whole concept, which is part of the task. And as a psychiatrist, yes, I write a lot of different medications. I treat people who are literally insane or what we would call crazy. But in this case, this young man is not insane, nor is he crazy, but he's, quote, crazy in the form of, like, crazy glue stuck on a certain mindset that he's experienced throughout his whole lifetime. So, which means, you know, sometimes I find myself saying, well, am I in the right place at the right time? And it's encounters like this when I really confirmed I am in the right place. But it is a task, and it's a task that we all have to meet. And the conclusion is that these kids want change, but they're afraid to ask for it, and they don't know how to ask for it. So if we can encounter them on a daily basis, I think overall we'll all be in a much better situation. So that's my my opening statement. I'm looking forward to our discussion tonight, and definitely looking forward to our guest speaker. Thank you.
And thank you so much. So basically, I think I heard you say they want help but don't know how to ask for it, or don't want to ask because of their loyalty to their friends.
Exactly. And, you know, that whole cliche of how do friends become co-defendants, I really hit that with them because, you know, when you're growing up and your parents say, well, you're lucky if you can count 10 people on both hands and say you've had friends for a lifetime. Well, these kids are giving that designation to kids who are putting them in harm's way, and they just have no idea what that means. But ultimately, they do want help, but they're not going to ask that friend for help. So in some cases, like in this young man's case, you know, his mother finding that gun in her home was his entryway to not only some safety right now in the interim until he goes back to court, but hopefully my encounter with him, and I gave him some directives and some resources to follow up with, but he does want the help, and it took him to cry. And the other thing that was interesting is that he started hearing and seeing things, and usually, you know, some clinician would say, well, this kid is losing his mind. No, it was what he was hearing and seeing was positive. He was hearing his deceased father's voice telling him to do the right thing. He was hearing his deceased grandmother's voice telling him to do the right thing. So the groundwork has already been laid, you know, in terms of adults telling him what to do and giving him some directives, but he's influenced by other kids, and I have to just, you know, hammer that in. Look, you're getting advice from kids. You know, kids are going to do what kids do. The only thing kids can do really is get angry and talk. They can't do anything else. So, but he wants the help, and he did receive the help, and it's just about the follow through at this point.
Thank you so very much. I'm excited to bring to you and to everyone tonight, Jacqueline, Jackie Carter. Jackie is the president of the Alliance for Safe Traffic Stops, ASTS, and the inventor of Not Reaching. And that's very interesting to me. Jacqueline has an Associate of Arts degree in Information Technology, a Bachelor of Science degree in Criminal Justice, a Master of Science degree in Legal Studies, and a Master of Public Administration with a concentration in Criminal Justice. She also serves on the Community Advisory Board in Alexandria, Virginia. Jacqueline believes in each person's God-given and constitutional right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, where justice and mercy are paramount. Jacqueline is a resident of Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome, 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 Jackie. So excited that you're here. And I just cannot wait. You've got so many great things going on. But you come your own way. Share with us your projects, what they mean to you. And based on what you've heard earlier, you know, from us, how this all ties in together with being broken and saving our babies. What is Not Reaching?
Well, sure. Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it and appreciate the opportunity to some of the things we've been doing since 2016. Not Reaching is something that I created in July of 2016 after the fatal traffic stop of Philando Castile. That day, July 6, we were celebrating our son's 30th birthday as Valerie Castile was losing her son to a routine traffic stop in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. And, you know, the conversation about, you know, what's broken. But for me that day, it wasn't what was broken. It was what came alive, and that was my purpose. And I knew that day that I had to find a solution. And when I say that, I say a solution, not the solution. And, you know, I honestly, that night, I still, you know, remember the prayer. I just was like, God, please, you know, I know I'm only Jackie Carter, but if you give me something, I promise you, I will fulfill it and live that purpose. And not long after that, Not Reaching came about. And what Not Reaching is, it's a vehicle identification pouch, and it clips to your driver's side air vent, and it holds your license, registration, and insurance. So when a police officer is approaching your vehicle for a traffic stop, you no longer have to reach. And that is what a lot of law enforcement officers that we interviewed said made them nervous during a traffic stop. When you're pulling up, when you're walking to the car, you see them moving back and forth, and it's a legitimate excuse. It's not the best excuse, but it is legitimate. So what we wanted to do was take that excuse from them. So we created Not Reaching. Ironically, maybe 2 years later, I had the good fortune to meet Valerie Castile. And what I learned that day was her son's last words, as she says, when he lost his constitutional right to live, his last words were, "I wasn't reaching." I did not know that when I named it Not Reaching. I just feel that there is such a connection with us, and I work very closely with her because, to me, Philando was my son. Anyone who has a real purpose and a real passion, you have to feel it. And every day I feel that passion, and I treat Philando as if he was my own son, because it could have been. So we created the Not Reaching Pouch. After that, I created our nonprofit organization called the Alliance for Safe Traffic Stops, or ASTS. And by promoting education, training, awareness, and the use of technology, we're committed to de-escalating tensions and eliminating physical harm among motorists and law enforcement during traffic stops. So what we believe we are, we bridge the gap. We are trying to bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community. Both are broken. Both need to be fixed. So we try to work closely with law enforcement, which we do, and we are also working to bridge the gap with the community.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So this is very interesting. And so you've been now since 2016?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The day Philando lost his life was the day I picked up the mantle then, and mm-hmm. we were not going to stop. And because
and it was just something within that, yeah. So it was just something within that said you have to do something.
Yep.
At that
it
moment,
was God-given.
You didn't know what.
Mm-hmm.
It was God-given.
Had no clue. It was God-given.
No
I had
clue.
No clue. I remember, and it's so funny, I remember waking up, when I woke up that one morning, and I looked at my husband, and I said, "I got it." And he's like, "What? You got what?" And I was like, "I got it."
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I went and sketched it out. We did a couple prototypes. Mm-hmm. One thing didn't work. I took it to police departments, and when we finally got it, you know, we knew it.
Oh, wow.
And I remember also people saying to me, "I don't like the name Not Reaching." And I knew it was a purpose mm-hmm. to that name. I didn't know Philando's last words were, "I wasn't reaching."
Wow.
And it still gives me chills to this day.
Right. The power of the universe, the power of God, you know, the spirit it connects us, and I often say, you know, it's one mind, and that mind is that mind of God that's on the inside of each one of us. Now, how we listen to it and what we hear and what we do and don't do, but there's a power, it's just not, that is absolutely no coincidence at all that you would name it. Not reaching, you had not met, you didn't know that those were his last words. You didn't know that. So
did not know.
How divine.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And the story, even when I met Valerie, I remember my husband saying, you have to meet Valerie. I don't know how we're going to meet her, but we need to meet her. And I had a friend who worked at a local radio station in D.C., and he said, Jack, he called me the day before, and he said, Jackie, Valerie Castile's coming to the radio station. I want you here. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I'm telling you, she is definitely my sister from another mister. The conversations we have, just the in-depth conversations and learning more and more about Philando that most people would never hear makes me even more passionate. You know, just a couple weeks ago, you know, I was a little down and just felt like, you know, some days you just feel like giving up. And she called me that day, and we had such a great conversation, and we encouraged each other because as hard as it is for me, can you imagine how hard it is for her?
You can't imagine.
You can
try, but you really can't.
This is a woman who was lying in bed, minding her own business, and her daughter came in the room wailing, watching the murder of Philando. Mm-hmm. And I tell people one thing about Valerie. Valerie is a straight shooter. She will say what's on her mind. You may not like the way she says things, but I like to remind people, we snatched her out of her world and put her on the stage. So you have to listen to her, no matter how she says it. And I'm going to tell you, she is an amazing, amazing speaker. Not just a speaker, she is a life changer. She's changed my life. And it's only for the better, and we're going to continue to create solutions because we do talk about problems, and I know we have to. However, there's a time where we have to shift it because we know the problems. We know them, but we have to change our mindset to be all about solutions, and I coined the phrase solutionary. I'm a solutionary. I know there's a problem, but I want to find a solution. And that's what I do, and that's what I think all of us can do. We can talk about it. We should, you know, keep things in the forefront. However, there is a time where we have to stop talking and start doing. And I'm just that passionate about it. I just refuse to stop.
I can understand. I really can. We work and we, you know, wonder why we continue on, but these are the whys. And thank you so much. We're going to ask Jared to chime in right now. And you've heard a little bit tonight. What are your thoughts?
Yes, ma'am, Dr. Lee. Thank you again for this platform. I'm always humble, and I appreciate it. And Dr. Carter, also, thank you so much. I'll tell you something else about that title, the name that you gave to that. Ever since I got my driver's license and have operated a motor vehicle as a black man in the United States, that was one of the supplementary lessons that I was given from my parents prior to anything else. The concept of not reaching has been around for a while, right? It was always just those things that were discussed over kitchen tables and not, you know, put into context like you have done. I think it's, to me, it just, it boggles my mind that a top passing the driver's test and everything else, and then, you know, buying a car and all, black people, especially black males, have to have a supplementary training course, as though you're joining the military or something, where you need supplementary and continuous training about how to not become the victim of somebody else's interpretations and assumptions, because that's what it is. It's assumption, you know, and it's assumptions that come from a pernicious programming that has been injected into America that black people are inherently criminal, that a black male is inherently dangerous just for existing, right? You see assault-style rifles in the hands of the police and everything else. How can that man feel fear? It's one of those things, it's hard to wrap your brain around. But the question that I have for you as a mother, as a wife, as a black woman who feels as motivated as you do to address the problems and the issues, and, you know, you were given that ability to have that clarity, how do you approach women who identify with you and offer them that ability to embrace that clarity that you got, even though you weren't in the situation? You learned later what Ms. Castillo was going through, and you were able to empathize. But sometimes when you're in the moment of tragedy and things like that, the weight of everything just creates more confusion in your head where you can't see that clarity of how to find a solution. So how do you address that issue?
That's a very good question. I actually think for me, I really believe that, like I keep saying, I know it's God-given. I actually that day felt as if I lost my son. You know, listening to Uvalde, listening to, you know, all these other things, when I heard Matthew McConaughey give the story, that story, it can only change you. It can only make you say, we have to do something. And I think that's the disconnect that I felt with other people who say they want to do this or they want to do that. Do you feel it? Do you literally cry when you think about Philando? Think about this. This is a scenario, Philando. Philando's at a traffic stop. Philando was as polite as he could possibly be. Yes, sir. Sir, I want to tell you, I have a firearm. When was the last time, and I will wait 4 seconds, when you ever heard of someone shooting an officer with the seatbelt on and a young child in the back? I have never heard of it. There was no reason to shoot this man. There was no reason. The one bullet barely missed the little kid in the back of the seat, just missed her. I feel that every day. I see him in my mind. I don't know why God placed Philando, of all people on this earth. There were so many things happening, but it was Philando. What I challenge people to do, if you really want to make a change, feel it. Because when you feel it and you live with it, you'll do something. And for me, that's what made the change for me. You know, that empathy, not even knowing Philando, never met him. That's the funny, I never met him. Mm-hmm. But the stories I heard, and then to find out in Alexandria where I live, he actually knew the head of the lunch program in Alexandria. They went to a conference together, and she could never forget him because he was so polite. He knew the names of all the students that came through the lunch line. He knew their allergies. What a wonderful man that's no longer here. I have to do something. I refuse, as I tell Valerie, to let the media bury him twice. He will never die as far as I'm concerned. He will always live. And that's the answer. I'm sorry it was a little long.
No, you're just fine. Thank you. You're just fine. So touching. We all live with our wives, and you're the reason I'm here. You know, I've worked with foundations and organizations and funding for so very long and watched, you know, people like you and so many others like Dr. Mike Kreese and Dr. Longs and Dr. Tynes and James Cannon, who's not here tonight, and Dr. Tatum. You know, all of us as the black people have something so dear to our hearts that we feel, we know that we've been called to do and we're compelled to do. And I watched, you know, us not have the funds to do in fullness the things that God has given us to do. Because I always say, we'll always say, the desire that drives us on the inside of you, that wanting to do certain things, it comes from God. The things that you love doing the most, that you want to do with a passion more than anything else on earth, that's what you're here for. I truly believe that from the depths of my soul. And from the depths of my soul, I want us as a people to be able to access the funds that others get so, you know, liberally. And we don't even have a clue that it even exists. We don't have access to the information. So my passion, my drive is that, you know, when I'm gone, what's going to be left here on earth is neighborhood commerce and access to what we have not had access to. And that is my passion. That is my drive for every for-profit, non-profit, to be able to do what you're doing. It takes money. Your pouch, you know, I didn't know until, you know, reading your information, you know, the first thing I was wondering, what is not reaching? And I didn't hear this before. I didn't know. I'm like, oh, my God, this is just so God-given. It is so God-given. And we do. We have to go through the same, my son and my daughter, you know, particularly my son. But, you know, the police stop you. Even back in part of our lecture, my lecture was, you don't even look at the police. If you get stopped, you don't, you just, you know, do what they say do. You don't even look at him. You don't even look at the officer while they speak. You just sit there like a robot with your hands on the steering wheel. And so this is so, so very important. I can't tell you how much, you know, I do appreciate you being here. Before we're going to go back to Dr. Moncrief, I want to thank Dr. Cannon for joining us tonight. We're speaking with Jacqueline Karcher, who is the president of the Alliance for Safe Traffic Stops. I don't know if you were listening, you know, before you signed on, Dr. Cannon, but she is the inventor of Not Reaching, and we were just discussing the identification pouch that she created. And this was done, it was a decision that she made at that killing of Philando Castile that very same day that he was killed by the police for no reason at all, just missing the daughter, the baby in the back seat, you know, and even as humble as he was. So we welcome Jackie, and it's just touching story. She's, you know, working, you know, with the mother, Valerie Castile, who is the CEO and president of the Philando Castile, released Relief Foundation. And so thank you, Dr. Cannon. We'll give you the floor, our co-host.
Beautiful, y'all. As usual, you know, this conversation is a conversation that's so needed, and we definitely appreciate our guests for a whole lot of reasons. You know, I have five sons, and being an Afro-American man in America, you know, I've been stopped by the police. I've been stopped by the police when I was a knucklehead young man, and I did everything wrong and said everything wrong. And then I've been stopped by the police when I wasn't a knucklehead and wasn't acting like a knucklehead. And amazingly, just from my personal observation, the outcomes were different. You know, so there is something to say when a young man understands how to conduct himself properly, understanding honor, duty, and country in America, that there are rules and laws. And the first thing of due process is that you can demand your rights, but you want to, as much as possible, make sure that you're doing the right thing. And a lot of times, you know, we do the wrong things very ignorantly, and sometimes we don't get a second chance. And so, Dr. Lee, and to the guest, I appreciate you so very much. I've been still working with my son, Nick, with the Stop Hating campaign, which is so very needed and necessary for our young men and young ladies across the country to first be able to say stop hating on yourself, stop hating on your parents, stop hating on your family, your community. And once we say that, you know, we get our young people under control where they're not hating on each other, then collectively, together, we can say to the world, stop hating on us. Because as Afro-American people, Negro people in America, if we just get down to the bottom of a lot of it, is hate. And so along with that Stop Hating, you know, I've started working with Legal Shield, which is a program that allows our young people to get their attorney on the line immediately. You stop by the police, you got an attorney on the line. 24/7, there's a small membership of $35 a month. But with that membership, you can call your attorney. They will write letters for you. They will talk to the police for you, intercede for you. And so there's an education for our young people to keep their mouths quiet. Not so much keep your head down. We want you to pay attention. But keep your mouth quiet and get your attorney on the line. It's your constitutional right. And so I'm thanking God for this program that Legal Shield has, because I think it is an answer. And I'm incorporating it into our Stop the Hating program, Stop Hating Due Process. We want our due process. And so because our young people can also get educated by these attorneys as they get an opportunity to deal with these attorneys as well. Any parent that has this membership at $35 a month, their children come up under that 26 years, so they also can reach out to their attorneys throughout the month for anything. That's the research, real estate, to set up business. So, y'all, I think it's a lot we can do. Again, these shows are outstanding as we have conversation like this and can bring solutions to the table, which I'm always excited about solutions. And so we're pushing to stop hating. So anyway, we can incorporate and work along with what you're already doing. I want to be able to just, you know, personally say we want to be a part of what you're doing. Dr. Lee, again, I appreciate you so much. And to the guests and to the show tonight.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cannon, as well here. Certainly, thank you. I would like to ask Jackie if you would, you have any thoughts or responses to Dr. Cannon's comments?
Yes, I appreciate the Dr. Cannon. I definitely believe in the Stop Hating campaign, also Legal Shield. Maybe about 20 years ago, I was a part of that as well. So I do know how important that is. One of the things I just want to say briefly is a part of our nonprofit is education and technology and training. One of the things we realize is that student drivers are taught how to drive, parallel park, all those great things that we all learn, but they were never taught how to handle a traffic stop. So we have partnered with HTC, HTC is the second leading virtual reality headset company in the world, next to Oculus.
Mm-hmm.
We've partnered with the Pennsylvania State Police and Metastage. And what we're doing is HTC is financing our virtual reality traffic stop training. We're going to be offering that in schools across the country. And this is all done through virtual reality. They will have the headsets. They will be in a traffic stop without ever being on the road. They will learn all the do's and don'ts, all the things they need to learn to be safe. We have to teach them. We have to teach them before they get on the road. We have to teach them while they're on the road. We have a lot of you know, we all heard that, you know, driving is a privilege. It is not a right. I agree. We have to continually get that message across. And I believe that training the youngest population, the new student drivers, can really change the trajectory of their driving history. So we're excited about that. We're also partnering with a company called XR Health, which actually provides virtual reality treatment in the metaverse. And that's also something to help with mental wellness and health. They will also provide a licensed therapist virtually with the headsets. They will meet virtually. This is covered through insurance. So there's the mental health piece that we're also working on too. So we're excited, mm-hmm. not just for Not Reaching. Not Reaching kind of has done what it had to do. The goal for me for Not Reaching is to go down to the African American Museum. I know that's not the correct name as we say it in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
But I want to go in there and see Not Reaching in a glass because it's a relic, because we've stopped that problem. I don't want this to be something that continues. In my mind, I want this to be a product that is taken off the shelf. So that mm-hmm. is the goal. But I just wanted to give you a little bit more information about the training that we're really excited to be in to start going into the schools and kind of complementing student driver training. So I just want to say thank
that's
you
great.
For the opportunity.
Dr. Lee, can
that's
I ask
great.
A question
I love
real quickly?
It.
Dr.
Yes,
Lee, can I ask
yes,
her a question real quickly?
Yeah.
That really sounds exciting. And for those of that, and it sounds like my sister that you understand the technology in where our young people are going, and working along with Dr. Lee, Nick Cannon's foundation, what we're doing, we're concerned about our young people too. But sounds like y'all got a leading, cutting edge. Can you share just mm-hmm. a little bit more for those that don't understand the metaverse and how that, I mean, if I can ask that question, how that will open up and how training will go into that? How does all that work?
Sure. So, you know, we see the kids now. Let's go where they are, right? They are all on VR. They're doing games, virtual games. Well, that's their world. So the regular training, standing in front of a classroom, giving a lecture, it's done. It really is. These kids only have, what is it, is it still a 15-minute attention span? I don't even think so. It might be 10 after COVID. So you have to get them quick, and you have to get them into the type of training and education they're used to. So they will have on a virtual reality headset from HTC, and it's called the Vive Focus 3, if you look it up, V-I-V-E Focus 3. And this headset will have the training, the simulated training, as a chip inside the headset. And once they turn it on, you're in your car. I really would love to show, like, have someone have this headset on. I have two headsets that HTC has loaned me, because talking about it is one thing, but actually being in an immersive environment is totally different. I had my husband of doing some kind of Spider-Man virtual reality, and I sat there and watched him to see how he was moving, and he started, like, hesitating. He started getting, his hands were, you know, going up and down. I said, "What's wrong with you?" He said, "I'm on the top of a building. I'm getting ready to fall." Like, no, you're not. You're right in the living room. But that's how immersive it is. You know what
wow.
I mean? That's how, that is how I, immersive this thing is. It, your mind will, you know, there used to be a song called Your Mind's Playing Tricks on You. It kind of does, because it tricks you into believing that you're in that experience. That is what I believe, and HTC believes, is what will really change the education and training for our young students. We have to bring them into the VR experience, the metaverse experience, because I'm going to tell you, in the next 5 years, it's all you want to see. So we're trying to get ahead of that. And I'm very, very honored to have HTC as a partner. Dan O'Brien, who's the president of HTC, is on board with our program. It's called the KISS campaign, Keeping It Safe for Students. So we're going to be, getting that out in by the fall. We're working on the production part of it right now. So that's the KISS campaign.
Wow, that's I love it. I love it. Dr. Moncrief,
I'm curious too, real quickly. How does parents get involved and understand that technology get in front of the curve?
It would help that alongside that training, that parents would also be able to experience that training from home. So what we're looking to also do is have that experience online, and they can download it as well, but they will need the headsets. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. These headsets are expensive. The Vive Focus 3 headsets are $1,200. And when I say that, you know, I realize that when I put them on, I understood why they were $1,200. It is the most immersive experience I've ever experienced in my entire life. Now, the goal is to be able to have HTC reduce that price for those who can't afford them. You know, so our goal is to get them to the ones who really can't afford, you know, $1,200, you know, some wealthy person could get a bunch of them. Well, schools can't. And so our goal now is we're going to be in our fundraising period within the summer and start raising funds so we can purchase these headsets and be able to give them away.
Oh, wow. This is awesome. We're going to do another show. And we're going to do a Zoom meeting too, you know, about, you know, potential funding, not potential, but real funding. Okay, you got me so excited, Jackie. My goodness, I am just too excited over here. Oh, okay, Dr. Moncrief.
Yes, yes. So this sounds very interesting. Concern is this is we're training our children to respond to situations that they really, really shouldn't have to be in, but in reality they are in. Shouldn't we be offering this same training for those law enforcement officers who are pulling our children over and forcing them to behave in this abnormal behaviors? It just seems like, you know, we're training the victims, and shouldn't we be training the perpetrators also? Is there a component in what you're doing so that, you know, the law enforcement officers can get these headsets and see virtually what the children are experiencing? Number one.
And,
number two, the pouch piece. And I'm having a little bit of trouble visualizing it because, I'm seeing something that's sitting in the door or hanging on the handle that the young person has to reach into, and I don't know if the police officer has visual sight that they're reaching into a pouch and not reaching for something and will shoot them anyway. So I'm having a little bit of trouble visualizing exactly how they reach into this safe place to pull out their identification and so forth without the police officers overreacting. Again, to me, the perpetrators need to be trained that these pouches are there and that the kids are going to be, or young people, or anybody's going to be reaching into these safe pouches and not reaching for a weapon. So my concern
sure.
is, shouldn't we be training the officers? Go ahead.
Yep. Number one, we are. And so our virtual reality training is not just for the students, it's for the officers. So we work hand in hand with law enforcement and the students. So the officers who are the law enforcement departments, police departments that are participating are also receiving the training as well. Now, we also realize that Axon, which is the you know, premier in body-worn cameras and tasers, also has a component of training, but I don't believe that it goes far enough. I think it just stops short. So the law enforcement officers and the departments that I'm dealing with so far have all agreed to also take the training. So that's number one. Number two, I would say if you go to notreaching.com, you'll find out more. You can see what it looks like. You can see where it's positioned. It's a plastic pouch with a magnet that clips on your driver's side air vent. You know, one of the arguments I would get, and I got a lot of them, was, well, you're blocking my air. Well, air circulates, so if it can't go out one way, it goes the other. And everything is in the pouch. Now, I was actually stopped. I had my not reaching pouch. I had a rental car, and I saw the blue lights. First time in my life I was ever stopped. I don't know if I'm just a great driver or just never got caught with some bad behavior. So I get pulled over. I had my not reaching pouch. I had my hands on the wheel. Officer came to the car. He said, you know, I need your license, registration, and insurance. I said, officer, I'm not reaching. My pouch is right there. All my information is there. I give you permission to take it off the magnet. He took it off the magnet. Everything was in there. What ended was a great conversation and no ticket because he was amazed that there no one was reaching. You know, like we took that from them. Like even though I don't mention that when I talk about not reaching, you know, especially in the law enforcement community, I mention it to the regular community because we're taking that excuse away. There's no way you can say I was reaching if I had everything there. So I would just suggest, just to get a better detail or a better overview, to go to notreaching.com, all one word, notreaching.com, and you can see more. I have a lot of interviews. You can see how the pouch is positioned. And also, you'll see that other police departments have taken my logo off and put their logo on because they believe in not reaching to the point where they're putting their logo on the pouch and giving these pouches out in their own jurisdictions.
How many jurisdictions are you in with this? I'm sorry, Dr. Marquise, I'll let you come back. And what is your footprint?
I am from Pennsylvania to California. We have Pennsylvania State Police, Susquehanna, Alexandria, Falls Church, City of Fairfax, Paso Robles, Minnesota Department of Public Safety, purchase the pouches. And
wow.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And they put their logo on.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we have a pretty good footprint.
You know, real quickly, you know, with again, working with young people all across the country, anything that we can put in a parent's hand when the young person goes out their door to give them more comfortability, you know, that means you have to have those conversations and then equip them. A lot of times we, as young men, they don't know where their information is. And, you know, that could just be a stumbling block. And what we can, you know, make sure they don't have stumbling blocks, you know, because it is a frightening thing to get that blue light turned on in the back. And even if you haven't done anything wrong, your blood pressure does go up. And, you know, depending on, you know, how the officers respond, you could have a bad day. I think, you know, anything I could do, I'd like to work along with you to get this to as many more cities, you know, and some of the young people that we're working with, some of the communities as well. We work through Dr. Lee and the Commerce, I think would be appropriate. But, you know, also, if when that blue light goes on, Legal Shield now has an app. You immediately hit the button. You got an attorney on 24/7. I don't think 10 years ago we had that. This is like mm-hmm. 5 years new where there's an app. You have your attorney mm-hmm. on the line. Well, now the educational mm-hmm. part is let your attorney do the talking, pull out your packet, give your information, and execute your constitutional right, which is you have the right to remain silent. You also have a right to an attorney. What Legal Shield is done through this app, y'all, really, I am promoting it, but I'm not, I'm just saying it's a great thing, because when a young person, when a police officer has a gun on his side, that makes the equation kind of hostile. But when you know you can get your attorney on the line that's waiting to ask the right questions, to say, listen, my client wants to get home safely. They've given you all the information. I'm going to stay on this line with my client until he gets home. That has gotten a whole lot of people home, a whole lot safe. So that's the reason I like Legal Shield. We're pushing it with Stop the Hate. In any way we can incorporate my sister, I'm open for it.
Well, I would love to. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, me too, James. I really would like for Nick Cannon Foundation, NCI, and also, let's bring some more celebrities, on board with this, Dr. Cannon. Mm-hmm. Let's do that, because this, I think, is one, I feel it's one of the absolute best tools and ideas, I mean, with so many different types of solutions, the educational piece, the headsets, and I can see us really being able to, fund, get the funding, pull it all together, along with, other community activities that it all fits together with. I'm excited. I'm so excited. So we're definitely, we'll talk. Let's talk tomorrow, Dr. Cannon, and let's come up with some strategies. Thank you so much.
Can I add just one
go
more
ahead,
thing, and then I'll be finished?
Absolutely.
Dr. Lee, there's also an organization that I think would be so beneficial. They're called BAMFAM, BAMFAM Foundation. BAMFAM actually gets celebrity athletes together to work with the young people in the community. One way that they do that is through a ride-along program. So what they do, you get a famous athlete, let's say the Commanders in Washington aren't too famous right now. Well, let's go to Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. So you get one of the, I don't like football. So get one of the quarterbacks to drive around Baltimore, and they're talking to the officer, trying to bridge the gap between officer and the community, finding out what's going on in the community. Then they do an event, exercises and, things with the kids when they go back to the high school. We're partnering with them to add the VR to the training. So look up BAMFAM.org. The executive director is Ollie Mayberry. Unbelievable program.
Okay.
It's a nonprofit, and they don't charge anything to have people come out.
Okay.
Wow. And I think those programs all together. And one last thing, I promise. The Boston Celtics are playing. That's my favorite team. So the one other thing that – I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't have said that.
No.
Because now I forgot what my last thing was. So never mind.
It'll come back. As soon as it comes back, here. It'll come back. Dr. Moncrief?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think you were
speaking.
Up a little bit.
Just to follow up a little bit more on the training for the police officers. As a physician, what we have to go through is what we call continuing medical education, where we are required, in order to keep our certification, to have a certain amount of hours learning about different topics. And if you don't learn, if you don't participate, you don't get certified, then you have to stop practicing until you do. It sounds like this program could be something that's required for a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
You can put it in the academy, and young officers coming through will have to take that class or that course. But we have a lot of older officers out there who are doing a lot of damage. And it just seems like this would be something that if they were required to take, and the experience that you had, some of them may still have that same experience when they put on these headphones and understand truly the damage that they are doing. So is there – what exactly is the training involved, and is there a way that we that this training can become required not only for people in the academy but people who are out there on the street?
Interesting, because we I have a connection with someone who is trying to get us into Quantico, which is obviously a training facility, and that would be a big help. I think the answer to that is more or less dealing with an individual law enforcement organization to bring that that point up. I do believe that the ones that I am dealing with are extremely ready for change. A lot of them are black police chiefs who understand what has been going on, and they are ready to have this type of a continuing education. So it's just going to be more one-on-ones with them to have a police chief make that decision more so than like a law. But the police chief could make a decision and say, this is a part of our continuing education.
And then the community.
Another citizen can push for it, too. I mean, we can get things done, you know, collectively. So we certainly can, you know, if we need to bring Black Lives Matter or, you know, some other, you know, other national organizations, we can certainly push this ourselves. The also the people's the Poor People's Campaign, Dr. It slips my mind right now, from North Carolina. I think he would be someone that would be very good for this, to bring about some you know, mandates. I mean, it's critical at this point. It's just as important. I mean, this is part of gun control and a solution to, you know, what is happening to us in many ways. Was it Jared speaking or someone was trying to speak?
Yes, ma'am. It was me. I have a question for Dr. Carter. Kudos to HPC, by the way. You know, I'm a proud HPC
Vibe owner. Okay, I wanted to make sure Dr. Moncrief was finished. Dr. Moncrief, did you finish?
Yes, I was finished. Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you. Go ahead. Jared.
I just have a question about the program and the process for the traffic stop training. Technology is only as good as the system that it's in. Have you guys given any thought to who's going to be proctoring this training? The one thing I think we need to avoid, generally speaking, is more indoctrination being foisted upon our children and us as you know, members of the society. And I'd also like to hear from Dr. Longs about that indoctrination piece, if you guys could.
Yeah, we're going to get around to Dr. Longs, of course. He's our...
if I could respond real quickly. As far as the training of the officers and using this technology, I think they are using technology, and they've been using it, and I think we're the butt end of that technology. It is a scary job, I imagine, for a police officer to go out every day and stop people. And the way they've been trained, based on my experience, is you know, to observe, but not really, you know, giving us the benefit of the doubt. And so it is necessary for us to have some training for our young people, so they understand that you may not be given the benefit of the doubt out there. And so, therefore, you can't run your mouth. You can't make mistakes out there when someone has a gun on their side. The most important thing to do is to make sure we get home safely. And so I think the police officers are being trained, and they do have technology. If we can come up with additional training that can be talked about and accepted into their training. I think we need to present good alternatives to them, but they're already being trained. Matter of fact, they're saying, Tyrone, when you get out there and you know you can't outrun Tyrone, then what you going to do? If Tyrone reaches for something, then what you going to do? They're using simulations of our young people in a lot of ways in their training. So when we understanding that they're using us in their training and they're not giving us, they're trained not to give us the benefit of the doubt over and over, then we've got to train our young people. So I think the program that you have is outstanding because it gives us the conversation with our young people so they don't make mistakes out there when they stop. It's a hostile situation. I asked my sons one time, including Nick, and I guess, you know, the question came up, should a young person run when they see the police? And I said, no. But my son said, why not? Why shouldn't we run when the police come? And my thing is, if you run, you're going to get shot. Even if they're not, you put yourself in a more hostile situation. But then when I begin to think about when I was a young knucklehead boy, when we seen the police coming, we dispersed. We took off. And so what was in my mindset then that would make me want to run from the police and what makes a young person today think it's all right and okay to run from the police, which that could be very detrimental to his life right from the beginning. So we need to train our young people.
I agree.
Yeah.
I also, there is training out there for law enforcement. Axon is doing a lot of the training. So that's an issue because Axon is the body-worn camera company. They're the taser company. They claim to have a community department that they're interested in the community, and I'm going to tell you that they're not because I've worked with them. So we do have to do a lot more training. The one thing I wanted to say is also to Dr. Cannon, one of the things we're looking for is high-profile actors for our virtual reality production. So, you know, that's something that we would love to have, a celebrity do, a young teen celebrity if we could, or, you know, just to get, you know, the actors in it. And these actors will be a part of that whole production that goes out to the schools.
Yeah, this is wonderful. I'm just so excited about this. I am. Let's see. I want to remind our listening audience to please tap one on your phone so you can join this conversation. Now, we do have live. It's anonymous, but I do know who it is. So if you want to speak, the floor is yours.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, hi. Yes, that was fabulous. Ms. Jackie Carter, this is Francesca, Ms. Sparkle. I'm Ms. Corporate Washington, D.C., and we've done so much work together. And I've just completely enjoyed just hearing all the fantastic connections and things that, you know, is going to be coming down the pipe. So that way these pouches can be where these young folks are going to be able to utilize them, you know, and we're going to be able to save so many lives, especially at, you know, HBCUs and being able to have more awareness with more having the Nick Cannon Foundation and other great organizations really being able to push the pouches out there. It's just going to save lives, and I'm just so excited to see that because, you know, you get tired of seeing devastation and, you know, God is utilizing you and your service to, you know, definitely keep our black and brown children, you know, alive, and that's so spectacular.
Thank you very much. And, you know, we created a special Philando pouch when we put his image on the pouch. To me, that was special. 5 years ago in 2021 was, you know, the commemoration We don't like to say anniversary. And, you know, we did a fitting tribute by putting his pouch on there. But that's one thing I also want to let people know. We're not married to the image. If it helps to get the pouch out, Nick Cannon pouches, put his image, I have no problem, because it's about the message of the pouch and what it does. Mm-hmm. If it's, you know, whatever it is, if it's, you know, like Minnesota State, Minnesota Department of Corrections, Alexandria Police Department, their images is on there, mm-hmm. because it's not the what's on there, it's what goes in there and how that communication is bridging the gap. So there's mm-hmm. many ways to go about it. And I'm grateful, and I know we're over time, but I thank you very much and love to work with you more. And if any of you are in D.C., I would love to give you an opportunity to experience VR.
Okay. We're not over time yet.
Oh, okay.
We'll have some time. We're going to go to Dr. Thank you so much. We go to Dr. Long.
Hi,
Dr.
Long.
Okay.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
This is a great innovation, and I applaud you. But as I was listening, I was trying to figure out with the pouches and the other things, is this a level of and perhaps the physicians will appreciate my question regarding primary versus secondary prevention. And if so, who's the target? Who's at risk? Are the officers the targets, or is the community the target? And the reason I base this question is usually I don't comment on some of the other things I do in my private office, but I'm actually involved in five cases involving policemen with abuse in their lawsuits, particularly with the city of Detroit, where a 82-year-old woman was mistakenly dragged out of her house at gunpoint by Detroit police. They had the wrong house. And so I'm a part of a lawsuit involving an attorney who I was hoping to call in. And my focus is, from a clinical perspective, and as a psychiatrist, what is the area of primary versus secondary prevention? And what I mean by that, for example, you know, with COVID-19, we're doing primary prevention by giving people vaccines. Secondary prevention would be the boosters and things like that. So in this case, who has the illness? Is it we as the population dealing with systemic racism, or is it actually police officers? Quite often I'm called upon to actually determine the character of fitness for officers or fit for duty. And this is the same question I go back and forth with when I'm interviewing these officers. And so I just wanted to kind of put that out there in terms of with the pouches and the other things. Is the primary or secondary prevention for the community, or is it for the officer, or is it for both?
I think primary is both. It's primary for the officers, and it's primary. It's not even secondary. It's primary for both. I have been building relationships with law enforcement agencies over the last couple of years, and I believe that that building of relationships opens doors. You know, I had a pastor who always told me that until you build a relationship, nothing else will work. So I've had them kind of like, you know, take the veil off, you know, really share their hearts for what they want to happen, how ashamed they are of some of the things that have happened. So I think it's the primary is both. You have to train both sides. Both sides are in danger. Because we do know that, you know, sometimes in vehicles people get stopped and certain things happen, and officers have been at the end of that, and also vice versa. So we look at both are primary, not even secondary.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to bring up is that in our nonprofit, it's called LLSM. Maybe 6 years ago, we put on a program which was aimed to look at the training of officers and how do you determine fit for duty? And what we found and what we were advised by, and again, these were unnamed individuals, that we needed to cease what our goals were in terms of looking at what is the training. And one of the psychologists, which is a part of our group, you know, we looked at this MMPI, which is so outdated, and it's based on policing back in the 1940s, which didn't include primarily African-American officers and others. So, you know, and I'm glad we have these other tools necessary to keep all of us safe, but until we get to the point of what actually are determinants of the character of anyone to be a police officer to service a community should be one of the main objectives.
A good point. I also work with former law enforcement officers, one in particular who had a very good word to say. His case had a lot of headlines. He's a former MPD officer in D.C. I knew him because I was a grand jury court reporter in D.C. and Virginia, so I saw a lot of officers come through. He was the golden child in grand jury. He could win over a grand jury with no problem. Well, one day I'm watching the news, and I see my guy doing an evasive search. I mean, when I say evasive, he was digging in places he should never have dug, and he was fired. And what stuck to me about that, watching that, and I watched it several times because, first of all, I was in shock that it was the dude I knew. But then I also looked at other things, and the other things I noticed were the other officers around him who didn't even budge, similar to George Floyd. What I learned from that, it was a learned behavior. It was the culture of MPD, and it still is. So I have him who knows the culture and is working with us to be on the inside to make those changes. He knows what they are. That gives us an advantage to make some changes and have evidence that, you know what, you do these evasive searches all the time. It wasn't just him. It's done all of the time. So we're working with someone like him, and he also has given us great pointers on training, like for new officers. You know, when officers have been on the in these special units, take them out of commission for a year and do training, and then get others out in the field. And then, you know, so we have constant training. So, you know, there's a lot of ideas coming too with that, but we are working with, like, former law enforcement officers who have a clear understanding of the culture of law enforcement. It's not black and white, it's blue. And blue sticks by blue. And that is the absolute case. So having people like that being a part of our board, helping us when, you know, we can't navigate certain waters, will only help to enhance our training.
That's great. That's great. Okay, so we are getting down to the wire and wrapping it up tonight. This has just been so awesome. I'm just very, very excited about it all. We're going to start with Dr. Cannon of last thoughts and summary and wind it up, and then we'll go to Jared and Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Long, and Ms. Jackie will be the last voice.
You know, I appreciate this conversation again because all of us want, you know, to get home safe. We want our loved ones to get home safe. You know, all of us have been in situations where, you know, we've been with the young people called driving dirty, where maybe we had, you know, registration or a ticket or something that caused us to have a little anxiety, you know. And, you know, the other side of that is the police officers that stop us, these are human beings. Most of them went to some of the same schools in America that we went to. You know, they've got some biases, yes, but we've got biases they've got prejudices and we've got prejudices. You know, one gentleman that I respect very well, Master James Wilson, told me a long time ago, he said that both parties just need to chill, you know, and, you know, when we can, I imagine if Trayvon Martin and Mr. Jim Zimmerman many years ago, if both of them could have just chilled and had a conversation. You know, we have hostile situations in our own families with our own loved ones that go awry. You know, we say things we never get to take back. We hurt feelings. And sometimes we even go overboard with it, and we need somebody to pull us back and say, slow down. You're taking this too far. But, you know, we are all human beings on this planet, you know, trying to make sense of things, trying to make sense of life, trying to make sense of family. The police officers, hopefully, you know, want to get home safely. You know, like I said, I was a knucklehead, and I dealt with the police officers like a knucklehead at one time. And, you know, I got, you know, knots upside my head as a result of it. But once I became a man and I understood, you know, the law and order, and, you know, I attempted to do all I could, you know, to abide by the laws and order and be respectful, you know, my conversations and dialogues with the officers were very, very different. You know, so when I share that wisdom with my sons, that you can't act like a knucklehead and expect for people to give you respect. You do have due process, you know, and we can fight for your due process right. But, you know, as much as possible, try to be on the right side and do the right thing. You know, a lot of our young people think they have a right to go word to word with somebody that has a gun on their side. That's foolish. You know, you have the right. And we have to understand our rights. The gentleman asked the question, you know, are we dealing with secondary or the primary? I think the primary is to get the pouches across the country to every young person that's driving. And I think also to get them educated, Legal Shield can help with that. And I think shows like what we're doing now, if we can get our young people to tune into some of these shows so we can hear from them. You know, I had a young man tell me one time, and I don't want to get off the subject, but I was driving a bunch of young men, young fellas, and one of the 14-year-old young men in the back, he said, if my girlfriend don't give it to me tonight, I'm going to take it from her. And his partners and friends were saying, yeah, man, yeah. They was negging him on. I stopped the van and pulled it over. And I looked that young man in the eye, and I said, young man, if you take it, that's rape. And they got a jail cell for you. And I could tell that young 14-year-old boy had never had a man look him in the eye and say anything strong to him like that. And I believe he got the message. So to be able to have shows like this, Dr. Lee, where we can continue to talk about and bring great programs to the table, what we can partner up with, I say a job well done. Let's just keep doing this over and over. And I appreciate this show. I appreciate you, Dr. Lee. Appreciate our guest tonight.
I appreciate you too so very much. Thank you.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio.
So did we? I don't know what's going on, but I'm having technical issues. Can you all hear me? Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
I can.
Great.
Come in a little too.
Okay, great. So it's saying you're not, I'm not connected, hold on. Okay, so whomever is next can go ahead. Thank you so much, Dr. Canna. Jared?
I think it was me, Dr. Lee. Yes, ma'am. So as usual, I'll say God bless you all for the work you do and everything that you do. It's always a humbling experience to listen to the wisdom that you all share, and just knowing that this is having such the impact that it is, it's a comforting thing. Dr. Carter, God bless you. Thank you so much for, I mean, even just your way of looking at things, right?
it's difficult at times to be able to pull yourself back and look at things from sort of a perspective-based analysis, you know, especially when you're the person who's in the middle of whatever it is. Having that other person who is able to kind of be that example and to put those things out there, and to be a woman who's as accomplished as you are but still feel as much as you do for the people who are still working their way towards that, it's a blessing, you know. I want to say, Dr. Cannon, everything you said about the Legal Shield thing is one of those things that I think should be almost paramount. If you have apps on your phone for wasting a lot of time, why can't you have something like that? Things like that are the things that will help us to move beyond a lot of the entrapments that we've been given, you know, because there's a lot of things that we've been given. And if you're a young person who's not had the guidance of an older person who's experienced some things, you're walking into these things for the first time. And that ignorance for us, sadly, could be, you know, a life or death type of a thing. It's not a learning experience. It's a trial by fire, right? I think that this will be almost the Lazarus Day of our old way of seeing things in a lot of ways. We've now started to get on the same page, thinking and talking about things that offer solutions, like Dr. Carter said. It's not just thinking about the problems. You do have people who are not just talking about it anymore. They're seeking out methods of providing it. You know, and your example, I think, will go a long, long way. Shout out to Francesca Sparkle, by the way. You know, glad to hear you come on. That your story touched me deeply, and I'm glad to hear you come back on. It's absolutely awesome. But that's pretty much it. I just wanted to offer a positive message of saying how I was affected by this, and you know, how inspired I feel about it. And, you know, I'll just keep praying for all of you, always. So God bless and thank you. Good night.
Yeah. Good night.
Thank you so much, Jared. Thank you, and Dr. Cannon. Dr. Moncrief?
Yes. Very, very, very good show tonight. Lots of information that was shared. Anything that we can do to help protect our children is worth doing, is worth trying, and I can see this being a successful way as Dr. Cannon said, helping our children make it home safely. Unfortunately, they're in a situation where they have to, be the victim of perpetrators, and perpetrators are the law enforcement officers in this instance. Yes, they are, the law enforcement officers are people. And so if they're people, then they should want to do the right thing and not pull over our children for doing nothing. When my 8-year-old nephew, now, he had a birthday. If he's in the car driving down the street and blue lights flash, he gets excited, okay? He gets excited not because, oh, he's getting ready to see a police officer. He gets excited because he doesn't know what the police officers are going to do. He's already scared. His father's already talked to him about what to do when the police pull you over. I hate that my nephew has to be trained to react in a situation that's not normal. I'm glad that he knows that he has to act a certain way, but I'm sad that he knows he has to act a certain way. And that's why I keep harping on the point that the police need to be trained. The police need – when I was growing up, we used to think the police were there to protect us. You know, we saw the blue lights, you know, our hearts don't beat fast because we're afraid of what they're going to do to us. Our hearts beat fast because, you know, we're excited to see them. Now we're afraid of the police officers. That's the reason why I say, talk about what kind of training are we going to do for them? What kind of mandatory training? are they going to have? And if they don't do this mandatory training, what are the consequences? You know, let's always put the burden on the victim. Let's put the burden on the perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And not all police officers are bad people. Okay, I've had two of my three brothers were in law enforcement. All right, so that's not where I'm coming from. I'm coming from a place where if you train people to do the right thing, most of the time they will do the right thing. But the police officers we have out there now, they're trained to protect themselves. We pay them to protect themselves, not to protect mm-hmm. us. There's something very wrong mm-hmm. with this. So that's all I'll say on this topic. Thank you.
And thank you so much, you know, as you were speaking. And, I was talking about growing up. And I grew up in part of Detroit. Yes.
I had a question about the pouch, too. That was great what you just shared. If the purchasing of the pouches, is it a way that the young people can – is it on an affiliate program where – the young people, as they sell them in their cities or get them in their cities, they can be compensated?
That's a good question. What we have been doing is simply, we have them for sale for $9.99, but what I usually do, and Francesca can speak on this, I probably gave away more than I've ever sold because, yes, of course, everyone wants money, and I'm no different, but that's not the goal. So I would welcome some kind of affiliate program. We've never done that before, but we usually do something called a bulk purchase. So if we get an order for not reaching pouches over 100, I reduce the price to $4. I mean, bare bones. And so to be able to give them out, or if I know there's a need, I just give them away because.
Well, see, like, that's what I said to my son Nick. You're a master in creating, but you in being business-wise, in this show, Dr. Lee's show, really, we started out 400 years of entrepreneurship. So with a lot of great ideas come through here, which you've got a great one, and with that being able to disseminate all across the country, I think an affiliate program so that the parents, the young people can really get excited. Because one of the answers for our young people to turn them in the right direction is to show them how to make money. And if we mm-hmm. as adults can show them how to do that, you know, then they will listen to us again. They will pay attention. If what we're telling them really, really works, that if you run from the police, son, and you ain't got no reason to run, and you making, you know, $1,000 a day, over the internet, what you running from the police for? You ain't got no reason to run. You making legitimate money. So I'm saying if we can show our young people how valuable they are, and this internet and these tools are, and you know, and getting them interested in investing in the stock of the metaverse, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. If we can get them excited not to do knucklehead stuff, don't run from the police, okay, because the police is trained, you know, and I don't want to live in a city where we don't have police. I don't want brutal police. Mm-hmm. But if somebody's shooting outside the house or breaking in or whatever, I don't want to have to go out there. I want to be able to make a telephone call mm-hmm. and know that there's a unit that's going to come deal with that. I don't want them to be abusive. But, you know, we do have a lot of guns in America. And before I would say take away the guns from the police, because then the criminals would have the guns. And if we say take away all the guns, then we're going to have a civil war. So I think if we're teaching our young people where the world is not looking at them as criminals, because they're looking at them as wise business young men and young women, then if we can help that image and change that image, then some of these good police officers that are afraid and don't know what to do and not going to give them the benefit of the doubt, we can kind of get that fear that they have in their eyes, because our kids have fear in their eyes and the police have fear in their eyes. And so when that comes together, You know, like one person said, everybody just need to chill, maybe go have a Coca-Cola, chill, have a conversation. I think President Barack Obama was right, bringing the hostile people together, just chill and have a beer together, have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I've been to the police department, and I say, listen, I want to go on a ride on. I want to have an arbitration if something wasn't handled right. And they've opened up the door, let us come in and have arbitration. So if we request it and it makes them better because they're protecting us, they do need to be trained, but the way they're being trained right now is not to give us the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Totally agree.
So, and I told, thank you, and I, you know, completely do agree. And, you know, when you speak of the fear in our kids' eyes, as I was starting to say earlier, you know, growing up in Detroit, part of the time, you know, I can remember as a young, you know, as a kid, you know, the Big Four and those who, I don't know who are on here, I don't know if there's anybody on here old enough or remember what they used to call the Big Four. So we were, you know, it's just really amazing some of the things I didn't even understand. You know, of course, all the connotations that went along with that, but we knew when you hear the Big Fours in the neighborhood, you know, something really bad is going on. Here, we're under 10 years old, and, you know, with these kinds of thinking and mindset, someone had said earlier about the 8-year-old, you know, who we shouldn't, our kids shouldn't have to think this way. And so I'm just all for, you know, everything that we can do with this project, and we will be working on it diligently. And I think that this project, I feel that this here is an opportunity in so many different ways, you know, for many different types of entrepreneurship. And I really, really do like it. And so we're definitely going to work on it. I want to thank everyone. I know we're not done. Dr. Long, the floor is yours, and then we're going to ask our special guest to sum it all up until the next time. Dr. Long.
Again, thank you, Dr. Thank you, Dr. Lee, for the opportunity. I want to give a great thanks to the guest, Dr. Carter, for her initiatives. You know, I guess my conclusion is, you know, as I was listening to the closing statements, in general, you know, the whole country is dealing with a sense of trauma. And it's, you know, we have to come up with different ways in terms of addressing primary prevention. And again, my focus, again, is looking at the training of the officers. And when you have a police force, say, in Detroit, where if you don't have enough people going through the academy to become officers, and let's say some of them may not meet the cognitive level in terms of operating as a person who's supposed to protect and serve, then, you know, you've got to have a force, so you're going to start lowering your standards in terms of who can be an officer. So my goal and some of our nonprofit goals have been to try to change and the whole structure of what it takes to be an officer. It's ironic that I've been in cases where defendant attorneys, in terms of their character or fitness, and it's interesting how lawyers are just vicious toward one another when it comes to something where they've broken a particular mandate or a law or a character flaw. I think it should be the same thing with officers. And, again, we're using the standards that are so antiquated in terms of determining who does have the character to protect and serve. And I think if we look at it from that perspective, in addition to the primary prevention that Dr. Carter has come up with, I think we'll all be better, well served.
Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Okay, I want to again say to you, Jackie, I appreciate you coming on. There's still so much more to learn about you know, everything and what you're doing. So I'm hoping that we can get you back, maybe with, maybe with your, your vice president and even Valerie Castile. We would love for her to join us and share, you know, about her foundation. And yes, we're going to come. We're definitely going to work on this. This is major, and I think all of us are of a consensus that we have a solution. You know, we have a couple of solutions, three or four, and we don't know how many more can come out of this. I can see this definitely being an entrepreneurial venture for many, you know, the affiliate programs, you know, bringing in our celebrity foundations, and I can just really see it. So I'm very, very excited about working with this and with you. Again, thank you for sharing, coming on here and bringing about this awareness. I had no idea, what's going on, but we really want the world to know about this. And so, so many ways that it can be integrated, you know, in almost any type of business, really. So I'm excited about this. Thank you, Jackie. And the floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and I thank all the guests. I thank you for the dialogue and brainstorming, actually. And I do believe that. I will bring to my board an affiliate program. I think that's a very good idea. They never thought of it, but I did want to have a way of kind of bringing some young people in to understand, first of all, why it's needed, because if they buy into it, they'll use it and they'll you know, have their friends buy into it. So I like the affiliate program. Just a couple of brief thoughts. One thing I learned about the Academy is they have a warrior versus guardian mentality. And what that meant was they are warriors first and guardians second. That's what they've been taught in the Academy. But what they're trying to do now is switch that to be a guardian first versus a warrior. But that was the mindset that was given to them, and now they have to be, you know, retrained. One of the things, too, we talk about is proactive compliance. We're trying to change society from being a reactive society versus a proactive one, so what we call proactive compliance. I have wrote down here something my wonderful husband says all the time, and Dr. Cannon, you would get a kick out of this. Don't hold court on the side of the road. Live to see another day. I think that's a great slogan for what you're doing with the Legal Shield campaign. I think that says it all, and that's what we want. They all want to get home safe, not just the driver, but so does the law enforcement as well. But there's a lot of things that have to go into that. If you have an opportunity to visit notreaching.com to learn more about the different pouches, I have autistic pouches for autistic drivers. I have deaf pouches. I have a license to carry a firearm pouch, which I call my Philando pouch. And I am licensed to carry marijuana, because that's another issue for licensed marijuana people. So we're going to incorporate all of that into the VR training as well, and work with the deaf community to be able to immerse themselves in a traffic stop even though they can't hear it. So, yeah, we're excited about that. Thank you for your time, just giving me an opportunity to explain some of the great things we're doing and that we will continue to do, and I hope to have an opportunity to work with you all.
Oh, we're looking forward to it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
You're so very welcome. And again, I want to thank our listeners, our audience. You know, you can always tap one, even at the end of the show, if you got something you want to say. We love you so very much. I want to just thank our co-host and co-producer, Dr. Cannon,
and Dr. Tatum and Michael and everybody who has had a hand on this show, our co-guests, our special guests, our doctors, I mean, who've just been so wonderful and just so full of information. I tell you, without you all, there's no Dr. Mary Lee. I love you. I want you to stay safe until next week. God bless you and beyond. I love you. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Peace to the ancestors.
Wow. Thank you.
Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Peace to the movement. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying your white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm wanting to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
Case scenario, might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the road is still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, races go. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gonna get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
America,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store signs. SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost the dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drugs. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
The nation.